If only they knew. The hub for young business minds.
Yes, people, it's Ted Lawler, and welcome back to another episode of the If Only They Knew podcast. Today, we're joined by Annie Mitchell, who's the co-founder of Bottle Shop Coffee, and she speaks about what really happened on Dragon's Den, taking a leap to start her own company, and so much more. So if you want to fuel your passion and your understanding of the business world, this is the podcast for you.
I am Annie Mitchell, and I'm the co-founder of Bottle Shop Coffee. We make the only award-winning canned coffees in the UK. We use really high-quality cold brew, and we don't add any sugars nor artificial flavorings, so it's a proper coffee that's ready to drink. What do? Kind of a little bit of everything. We're a small team, so we all kind of go across, you know, from production to marketing to sales, a little bit of everything across it, but all coffee.
Brilliant. Thanks for that. And let's dive straight into it. Who was you before all of this? Before we actually get into sort of what you're up to now. Who was you before the business? Have you felt like you've changed at all, transformed in any way, your confidence, your sort of even your ability or anything like that? Was you someone different before the business?
Oh, wow. So not what was I doing, but who was I?
Yeah. Who was you? Like, what's the word? Like an existential question, I think they call it. Yeah. Who was you before all of this?
Interesting. one thing that actually I suggest that anybody who is thinking about starting their own business or making a change in their career or just making a big life decision, that actually they should visit a life or a work coach, because something that I've learned about myself after starting Bottle Shop Coffee is before this, I've always prided myself on great work. And that to me is like always what I felt like drove me. Yeah. And recently, this is actually a very like recent revelation, is that it's not only great work that drives me, but actually I need the external validation. Right. And so for when you're in a normal job where you have a boss and you have various teams and you have a review cycle, so you kind of have that baked in continuous feedback. And that was actually really motivating to me. And I liked that. But when you go off on your own, there's nobody who's going to be saying, you know, good job, great email, great negotiation. Like that doesn't exist. And what I thought was really all about like the quality of the work was actually, yes, that, but also needing that validation. So one thing, I just sort of had that revelation about myself. You definitely still in a startup can get that from partners, you know, from when you get a big win and you list a new client, it feels like, yes, they believed in what I'm doing. They're saying great job. They're saying this is great to go. But overall, I think I've just become so much more self-aware. Like that's one specific example of realizing actually what do you need to keep yourself sort of going and motivated. And, you know, that creates energy and drives you. But I think I had a very different view of myself before this that has sort of adapted as I've, you know, just had to experience more highs and lows and you know, soloness than ever before.
Do you have a team around you now then? Like, obviously you mentioned there sort of having that person to sort of
give you that
positive reference and feedback. Do you have a team around you that you can bounce off of in some form to sort of give you that?
Yes. And my co-founder, Charlotte, is fantastic. Yeah. She is absolutely that person. And, you know, whenever you have something going wrong or a problem you need to solve, or, you know, it just, she is always full of ideas and energy and very excited, but also let's get stuff done type of person. So she's incredible. And then we have a team of four where everyone's really collaborative. Everyone, I think, works really well together. We're all friends. It's, you know, it's half work, half fun. Yeah. So definitely have that sort of support system. But also, you know, when you are the person calling the shots, it is a different dynamic. So it was more just realizing, you know, what I had preconceived notions about myself and work actually adapted and changed when you're in a very different environment.
Yeah, I get that. And moving sort of a little bit closer to where you are now, did you, sort of referencing that rather, did you always want to be an entrepreneur? Like, because we sort of spoke about who you were before and you was getting that feedback from other people. Did you sort of have that feeling deep down, like you could do something by yourself and sort of go into the business world in that sense, or what was your thoughts on that?
No, originally I actually had no intention of being an entrepreneur. That had, when I first started my career, didn't even occur to me. And then before starting Bottle Shop Coffee, I was running consumer strategy for a restaurant app, and we got acquired by American Express. And when that happened, you know, we had all worked so hard. We all had a stake in the business. This is a huge success. We got bought by Amex. That sort of feeling of elation of this is something that we've all done and built. And now we are actually seeing that success, immediate, tangible, everything. And so when we went over to Amex and started working there, I think once I had that taste, I realized very quickly I was not going to be happy in the corporate environment. I wanted to get back out, and I wanted to, you know, I'd done it. We'd successfully done it as a team. And now sort of like, what if I want to do it as not just myself, because it is a team again, but what do I want to take a step up and take more responsibility and be the one fundraising and really putting your neck on the line? And yeah, I did.
Yeah. What gave you that confidence then to sort of say, okay, that, because there's one thing in sort of understanding what you could do in terms of going into the business world and becoming an entrepreneur, but then there's another thing actually taking those steps and working towards it. So what gave you that confidence to sort of strive to achieve that?
The confidence was really in the idea. Like, yeah, we even talked about in the beginning, you know, it kept being, someone should do this. Oh, do you think we should connect so-and-so? So it's, and then it just very quickly became, wait, why am I not the one doing this? So it was more belief in the idea, and then feeling almost a little bit like, well, hey wait, why not me?
Yeah. I get that.
Felt like I was getting passed over for the job. And I was like, wait.
That's it. Am I right in saying as well, taking a little step back, you moved to London from New Orleans, was it? When was that in the journey, or have I got that?
I actually was living in New York when I moved over to London. Right, we talk about New Orleans. That's where my mom and her whole family is from, and that's where my co-founder Charlotte is from.
Yeah.
And New Orleans has always had cold brew coffee, and so that's where my Charlotte and I always talked about it, loved it, made our own. That was just sort of like a passion of ours where. It was just sort of always like a side topic for us. And then it was, went from, you know, joking about why can't we find this here? Why can't we find anything good? Why is there no proper coffee in like any of the retail spaces? Where we just decided, well, we're brewing this in our kitchens. Why don't we actually get it out there and improve the options on shelf?
What was the sort of like initial steps then to actually get that done? Because a lot of people sort of speak about, oh, they had this idea and then they sort of fast forward and then all of a sudden it's there. Like what were the initial steps? Was there what have you done? What did you do to sort of get there?
We felt like, okay, we have an idea. We have, well, especially Charlotte, she had built and sold the restaurant app where... We felt like, okay, we know amazing cold brew. We have the passion. She's successfully done this from start to finish. We both have the entrepreneurial spirit, but we don't have any credibility in the food space. You know, and we felt like in order to launch, we need to go share our coffees with all Europeans. Does this, you know, is this not only something that we love and is it American, or actually is this something that everybody in Europe will love? We did that and won 10 out of 10 blind taste tests. People were absolutely falling over it. And then we said, well, we need somebody who's already built that credibility in the market to solidify, yes, I think the market is ready for it. Yes, I think you're executing it correctly. Yes, this is, you know, on track. Yeah. So before I quit my job or really knew that we were going to do it, we went and looked for a partner, and our hope and goal was to get Soho House on board. And they did. And actually, when they said, yes, we're going to launch with you guys, we're going to support you, that's when I said, okay, you know what? This isn't just an idea. This is actually, if we want to give this a go, let's give it our all.
Yeah. Did you just say then that that was the moment you quit your job? Did I hear that right? When you heard that?
Or... immediately when I heard it? No, yeah. But it took longer to quit than it should have, but yeah. I knew that day that I would quit. That to me was a if this happens, yes, I will quit. Mm.
At what stage then did you make that jump to say, okay, well, let's sort of step back from the day job and pursue this? Because a lot of young entrepreneurs I bring on are in their like really early 20s, if not late teens, and they're still in their 9 to 5s and they're debating making that jump. And I personally say, wait until you actually start making some money first to even consider it. And then wait until the money you're bringing in is like slightly sort of matching your monthly salary or sort of you can see that potential in a few months time. What's your opinion on that? When do you take the jump to leave?
So I agree with you with having some security in place for when you're ready to make that decision. For us, we paired we're going to launch with Soho House Group along with raising capital for it. Yeah. So for us, that was the two things that went together. And if we had gone the other route where it was revenue driven first, then absolutely I would have waited till it was at a significant enough stream that it was, you know, logical. Yeah. I always think though, one, you should wait till the risk is not going to ruin your life. And you should also though have clear cut goals, or not goals, but benchmarks that, okay, if this happens, this is when I go. So that if you haven't hit that benchmark yet, actually, just because you're excited and want to do it, is it really the right thing? Why have you not hit that benchmark? What is the market telling you about why you're not there yet? And so being a little bit more conservative and realistic, or vice versa, sometimes it can get really hard where you're almost trapped in the day-to-day job where you keep doing your company on the side, and that sort of split between hours, between no social life, everything can get really overwhelming, but it's hard to actually get yourself out of, because you feel like you're protecting your business. You're actually, you know, it can become a safety net that's hard to let go of. So also making sure that you have a benchmark in mind so that if you do hit it, okay, it's time to go.
Yeah. And how important, just sort of on that whole sort of point of making a jump, how important is it to sort of build the experience in the field you want to actually be in, like in terms of the day job? Because I've had so many young entrepreneurs on, say they now run a production company making content. They spent years working as a runner, just being around other producers and being around that film environment. And of course, other examples of different things. They go into the food market, they work in restaurants, et cetera, et cetera. How important is that? And what's your thoughts on sort of getting involved in some way to get a flavor of the industry?
My view is that you don't have to have worked in what it is you want to do. If you have, like, you could have experience with it as a consumer, or you could have, or a user and realize that the system is broken or something like that. And to me, if you haven't, borrow that expertise, find people to work with who have, I think it's smart to jump into something having no background yourself, and also not having any, a dedicated mentor who does know this space, who can, you know, share sort of the history and the expertise, and you can decide whether you think that you agree with it and you think it's right or not. But we have, while we were not in food before, we were parallel to the space, and we had a strong network to talk to. That was where also we felt like bringing Soho House on board brought that expertise in. One of our investors is the founder of Halo Top. That to me was like, okay, if we're going to be a retail food, well, we're a drinks brand, but we need somebody who can actually warn us that, you know, of the pitfalls.
Yeah, I get that. And I think that's a really important point to make, isn't it? Also, just on that point, of those early stages, did you have a clear vision of what you wanted the brand to be when you first started? You sort of touched upon it earlier, but how clear was your vision? Did you sort of, because I know a lot of people, again, speaking from other entrepreneurs, they know exactly what the end product is and they're sort of working their way to it. And they saw that in the early stages. Did you see that initially, or did you sort of take it as it sort of happened?
We're actually about to be changing our brand, and I'm very excited.
Oh, wow.
For our 2.0. And to me, you know, that happens. Companies evolve. Yeah. If you look at Halotop's original branding, nobody would recognize it. Nobody would have known it. Yeah. Or, you know, bigger brands change all the time. But I'm on the branding side, I'm more excited for our 2.0. Wow. For me, the vision was really down to the drinks and the coffee and what we were trying to deliver.
Yeah, that's it.
And that to me was a non-starter up front. So we actually went through three partners before launch to get that where we wanted it to be.
Wow. Can you give us any insight in terms of what's changing? Is it a complete sort of overhaul? Is it the packaging, or is it everything changing in terms of the branding?
Most everything.
Most of it. Yeah, yeah. Well, that's a scary step though, isn't it? To actually completely sort of say, you know what, we've done that for so long now, but now let's just completely wipe it.
Yeah. Well, I would say the strategy behind it is the same. And I'm more a person focused on, for me, strategy is like bread and butter. It's what I understand.
Yeah.
So it's sort of the same approach, but going a different creative direction, which fresh and new and exciting. And I actually feel really good about it.
Yeah, I can see that you've got for those that aren't watching the video, Annie's got a massive smile on her face when she spoke about the branding. So it's clearly something good in the pipeline. But let's talk about the actual product then, because I think it's such a good product. I've looked into it and you've brought the product over essentially, like the idea was born in New Orleans, really, in terms of the culture of it all, and you've brought it over to Europe. If you don't mind, tell us a bit more about the product and why you thought that Europe and all the other countries would enjoy it.
Well, essentially what we saw, there's kind of two things going on together. One is cold brew that we love, and that's just the process of making really high quality coffee that has an amazing buzz, a smooth energy.
Yeah.
It's less acidic. You don't get the jitters or the heartburn or gut issues that some people get on coffee. But then the other thing that was happening in the States, which is really where Charlotte and I got excited about this idea, was ready to drink, meaning like canned coffee, is now over 20% of the US coffee market. Like it's a huge component of it. And the reason why it grew is because it had been around for a while with Starbucks Frappuccino, same as here. And smaller brands, high quality coffee brands, started coming in and saying, we can do canned coffee that's actually proper coffee. It's not going to be a Frappuccino. It's not going to be a coffee flavored milkshake. It's actually going to be, you know, you will drink this in the morning, afternoon, anytime. Like it is a full caffeine kick and not loaded with a bunch of junk that then has you crashing 15 minutes later. And Charlotte and I, being in the startup world, running around all the time, we were grabbing coffees on the go all the time, and everything in retail here is still really sugary, thick, tons of additives. It is coffee flavored milkshakes, which is great if you want a treat, but if you're looking for a coffee, that's not coffee. And so we really wanted to bring that where it's actually a proper coffee and not masking itself as that.
Yeah. Does that give you a sense of excitement then? Because you mentioned how big sort of the US market is, and the European and all the other markets sort of catching up to that. Does that give you a sense of excitement because you're going to be part of that massive potential, filling that potential?
Yeah, I do. So actually, it's not just the US. This trend has happened in the US, Australia, and Asia. And that's where we felt like Europe is the last to fall. Let's be the one to actually like get Europe up to speed on this.
Yeah.
And it made so much sense to us because coffee has had so many different swells from, you know, the UK was not espresso based if you look back 30 years, and it was all tea. And then the high street coffee shops came in and really turned that around. And now everyone's latte based and cappuccino based. And that same thing did happen in America as well. Went from, you know, gas station to lattes. And to us, the next logical evolution is, yes, ready to drink canned coffees are here. But the first question we get when we do tastings is everyone will say, oh, but there's a little sugar in there, right? It doesn't taste like coffee, most of the options. So people, it's not the same as if you were to walk into a coffee shop and get a coffee. So it's the ready to drink market previously has been a different product than actual coffee. So to us, that's like a natural evolution of why wouldn't you want it this way? Why wouldn't the trend go this way if we're doing it in the taste profile of what people want from coffee?
How does it feel to have an actual product that you can be proud of? Because as you're speaking now, I'm just thinking, I can see the smile on your face when you talk about it. And clearly in the Dragon's Den, which we'll get onto later, like you could just see the pride and the confidence in the actual product itself. So how does it feel to have a product you can be proud of?
It really does feel amazing. Like when I see strangers, people I don't know, drinking my coffee, when we do samplings and people turn around and say, wait a second, I didn't think I was going to like this. What is this? This is amazing. You know, we collect all of our customer feedback. It feels fantastic. When we got a great taste award, that to me was like, it made my month. Just sort of having the, you know, we set out to do it well and having other people get joy from that is so nice.
What do you say?
External validation, I was saying about.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, it all makes sense now. Yeah. What is the one thing then on that point as well? What you just said there. What is the one moment that you're proud of so far, or what's your greatest moment with the business?
I think my proudest moment was. Honestly, probably each time we win a new partner, that to me is like the ultimate high, where it still feels crazy that somebody like Ocado or Virgin Airlines wants to work with me. And I'm like that. I think every time, because, you know, I would want to say Soho House from the first time, but kind of every time W. Smith Travel, every time that we've gotten a partnership proposal with somebody, that it just, that to me is like the ultimate like excitement. And because you know, also naturally that does show sort of like stages of the business going, and so that to me is like so just exciting.
But you know what's coming. I've asked what is the best and the most proud moment. What has been the worst moment, or if not the worst, what's been the most challenging moment so far in the business journey?
So many.
Yeah, I can imagine.
I don't know. Do you want me to should we go on the I would say the most challenging was when we were like careening towards our launch, and our original canning partner was, they're not good people, and they were trying to do bad product and trying to force us to put it out there anyway. And that to me, and we were able to solve it. We were able to get, we were able to just say, nope, we're cutting this, we're leaving you, we're going to go do it ourselves. And so there was a solution there, but that first moment, it wasn't even, yes, there was the like, we have a looming deadline, but it wasn't even the fear of the making the deadline. It was the, how could we be just kind of realizing like there are some people who are really negative in business and get away as fast as possible. Cause I'd never experienced that in my previous work, you know?
Yeah, it is tough, isn't it? Like when you sort of come up against people, you think, like, how do these people actually exist? Like some people are so negative or just sort of get in the way and do everything they can to sort of to stop you, don't they? But I want to throw a curveball in it just before we move on. If you could sit down and have a coffee and a chat with anyone in the world, dead or alive, who would it be? Whose brain would you like to sit down and pick, whether that's an entrepreneur or just a influential person in your eyes?
Well, would it be for my business or would it be just because I'd be interested to chat with them?
Either or, whether it's for the business or whether it's something on a personal level, who do you want to sit down and have a coffee with if you could have anyone?
I'd love to sit down with somebody. I mean, this is gonna be a very cliche answer, I feel like, but I'd love to sit down with somebody like Albert Einstein and ask him, how did you approach problems? Like, I would just love to know sort of like the process that went into any of his creations or failures, just sort of, you know, he created something out of nothing. And so how'd you go about that?
Yeah. No, that's really interesting. My last guest said, what did they say? They said the founder of Hershey's, because I think the founder of Hershey's created his own like community and like sort of paid for people to start all the workers to live in a community. And he basically built his own actual community with houses and stuff. So I thought that was quite,
I did not know that.
Yeah, I know, it's crazy, isn't it? So there's so many good people to sort of pick from. But let's move on then to Dragon's Den. How was that? Talk us through that if you don't mind. How did that come about and how was that for you?
It came about because one of the producers actually reached out to us because he loved our coffee, which was
amazing.
I love that. Yeah. and then I think for me, the toughest parts were, they warn you beforehand that, okay, only, you know, 8 to 10 minutes gets aired, but you really will go and pitch for much longer. If they don't like what you have to offer, you're going to be out in 15, 20 minutes. Don't worry.
Wow.
If you are compelling to them, then there's a chance you're in there for up, you know, an hour and a half, 2 hours. And we were there for an hour, and I was there for an hour and 45 minutes. Since they'd warned me, I definitely was prepared for that. It was unique to me trying to pitch to 5 different personalities at once, because usually you sort of have, you know, you understand their background and their perspective, and you kind of know where the conversation is going to go. But having 5 different perspectives just sort of boomeranged at you is definitely an interesting style of pitch to have to respond to. And then what was also tough for me is I assumed they were going to tell you whether your segment would air and show you what's going to be on air. And that's not true. They give you maybe like 2 weeks heads up warning, and they say, so you're going to air, congratulations. And like, that's so exciting. But you watch it live with everybody else. And that feeling of, you know, there's a lot that happens in an hour, 45 minutes. What are they going to cut that down to look like? What am I going to look like? What is our company going to look like? And that sort of, and you can't take it back. So it's kind of like you're watching,
that's it, yeah.
It's watching reality TV where it feels like there's all this drama and you're judging yourself too. But it's also has real ramifications and you can't take it back. So it's incredibly tough to watch.
Yeah, that's it. Do you, looking back, do you think you gave a good account of yourself, like on a personal level?
There's still 2 different versions. There's what I think I did in the room and there's what got aired. If I could change a lot of the clips out for what we did versus what aired, especially all the rave reviews, like Sarah loved our coffee. There were so many great things and, you know, you know, I'm proud I did it. I think it's tough to take that risk, but it was worth it for the business. So I am very happy.
I think you did amazing, by the way. That wasn't me saying, me suggesting that you did bad.
We actually, we've been doing a lot of samplings and people will say, oh, I saw you in Dragon's Den. Like you did a great job. Thank you. Or they'll say, oh, I saw you. You're on Dragon's Den, and nothing comes after. And I don't know what's wrong because you don't say thank you. So I'm just always like, yeah, hi.
Yeah, correct. what did you think then when I think it was Deborah and Tukar, they tasted the product and they said, oh, I'm not too sure. Because when I watched it, when it first aired, and I sort of clocked onto what was going on, I realized it was just the different sort of taste palettes at play, like you said, coming from a different market, different sort of culture of people and different tastes. I sort of clocked onto that. And then Stephen mentioned it, didn't he? And he sort of brought everyone back together. But what was you thinking when they initially said, I'm not sure about the actual taste?
So for us, one, we do wind taste tests every single time. There are there are, people have preferences in coffee, and there are certain people that I will never say you'll love my coffee. For instance, if you are a dedicated Italian illy drinker, it's a very different profile. It's a very different experience. If you like burnt coffee, it's just not, we're not for you. So I don't mind hearing when we're not people's choice at all, actually. Yeah. But I do know that we're right, that we are the market profile.
So I guess like you said, you're confident in the product itself. So like when people sort of have any different opinions, it's okay, because you're confident, you know that the quality is there, the taste is there. What was you confident in your numbers going into the pitch as well, in terms of the valuation? I think it was 4 million, wasn't it? And then obviously like the all the little tiny numbers, like did you remember them and stuff like that? Were you confident to sort of go in there?
The tiny numbers terrified me, because actually Charlotte, my co-founder, is the financial one. She does our modeling. That's her background. It was in COVID, so she couldn't go in with me. So having to be there alone was very intimidating. I obviously know our numbers and, you know, I work with everything on her, but because that is the role that she plays versus I do production and marketing, the not having your safety net with you is very scary. There was one number that I was really unsure of, but I found out afterwards I lowballed it, so that was actually good. And then on our valuation, we already had raised money. We have investors, founder of Halo Top, others. So to me, I knew it was going to be a spicy offer going into the den, but I also knew that I already had validation on that. And there are a lot of very influential people in coffee, food and beverage and in the financial investment world that have already said, yes, this is what you should be able to get. So I actually was okay on that side. I knew I was going to get roasted a bit, but I was ready for it.
So you knew the product, you knew the numbers. Did you know who you wanted, one for one, and why you wanted them? Because I know I've seen it, like so many episodes of Dragon's Den, and they sort of know why they want to go on there, whether it's just sort of for the promotion and they have no intention of bringing on a dragon, or some people want a specific dragon for a specific sort of upcoming challenge. What was your sort of take on that, if you can tell us?
Yeah, I wanted the promotion. And then if we were going to take on a dragon, the only person that really made sense for us was Peter Jones. I decided not to call that out because I thought that would be very an aggressive stance to take when you're standing in front of five spicy investors. But that's also why Deborah Beaton really did not like me, is that was obvious. I think she, you know, was trying to force me to say it. And I knew that would not be in my favor. So I tried to cater to everyone still, but they knew. So that's sort of where I think some of the tension came from.
That's it. Last thing on the Dragon's Den then. When it aired, did anything sort of change? Because I've just spoke to actually someone just before this who was on Dragon's Den last week. And they said as soon as the episode aired, like within 10 minutes, the whole business changed in terms of followers, numbers and et cetera. How much of an impact has the show had on you as a person and also the business, if you can tell us?
I'm completely changed. No, I'm kidding. Nothing for me as a person. Other than it's fun to talk about. On the business side, we actually saw a huge increase in retailer interest. So actually our sort of conversations and relationships with buyers, trying to grow what stores and brands we're partnering with, we all of a sudden got crazy inbound on that side. Ours was way more of like a B2B uptick, which is huge and so impactful for us.
That's really interesting, isn't it? A lot of people have sort of said that the impact it has. So now I'm thinking I need to get on there as well. I need to apply myself. Last few quick fire things then. Do you have a morning routine that fires you up? Because I know for myself, I've been doing cold water, priming and breath work stuff. Yeah, I'm not sure if you're familiar with any of that, but that's made a massive impact on the way I start my day and the impact it has. So yeah, do you have a morning routine?
I do. I, first part's very lazy. I wake up, I grab a coffee and I sit on my couch. Like I literally take like, you know, less than 60 seconds to move from the bed to coffee to the couch. I sit with my dog and cuddle my dog for a little bit. And then I go for, most days I'll go for a run or I'll do a hot yoga class, but it's pretty much couch cuddle to usually a run.
Yeah, yeah. So a nice sort of relaxing start to the day then.
Yes. I mean, the runs are pretty long. I'm training for the Paris Marathon, so it's a... it's relaxing on the couch and then it's pretty
straight into it. Yeah, that's it. Who, another quick fire one, who is your favorite entrepreneur or brand at the moment, and you can't say your own?
I would not say your own. My favorite entrepreneur brand, thinking of the dog, I love Butternut Box.
Oh wow. Yeah
I think it's great what they're doing in pet food, because actually it's crazy what goes into some of the chemicals in pet food, and
it can
be very dangerous. And then on top of that, I think their service is amazing. They've layered on so much customer education as well. And they actually, you know, I think of them as a brand that's probably gotten big enough that they don't have problems, and they had a machine break towards the end of the year and they handled it really well. And I like companies that are solving a problem, doing it in a way that's great for their customers and being really thoughtful and not just completely profit driven, which it didn't seem like they were being.
Yeah, I love that. That's a good example. What would you say is your drive then? We mentioned earlier, you initially liked the sort of direct feedback, but what would you say is your actual drive as a person in the world?
My drive as a person in the world. I want to see good change. And I know there's change for good, and we're also doing a lot of ethical things at our company, but I mean, actually, like, that just because the way that things have been done forever doesn't mean we keep going down that route. Yeah. I'm not trying to say I'm going to take all the Frappuccinos off the shelves, but we should actually have good quality options next to them as well. I kind of think that in everything that you do, are you moving things forward? Are you applying or providing better options and making, you know, all of it better for the rest of us?
Amazing. And what would you say has been your biggest lesson throughout your personal life or your business career? What's been the biggest lesson?
My biggest lesson. I think moving into the startup world is build great relationships and be a good partner to everybody, but also at the same time, don't trust that everyone has the same intentions with you. So really get to know people before you let them run with something.
And what would your one, if you could pick one advice be for the young people out there, whether it's from a business perspective or just a general life perspective, what would your one piece of advice be for those people?
To ask for advice more, whether it's, you know, you have an idea and you think you might want to start it or something isn't going right in your career. People love helping each other. And I think a lot of the times people don't really get there yet because they feel like it might be awkward to ask for that. Or, you know, I have a good friend who is wanting to start a business, and she admitted she's had a blocker on the legal side that she just doesn't know how to solve for a month now. And wow. Just call. I'm happy to talk it through. She's like, you don't like legal stuff. I'm like, well, yeah, but sure. But I know the answer for you and I can point you in the right direction. Like, ask.
I love that. Well, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on. I really appreciate your time and your advice as well. I've took a lot on myself. Final thing, what is next for yourself and the brand as well? And tied in with that, do you want to have a legacy that you leave behind? And if so, what would that legacy be?
What's next for us? We are trying to get into the largest supermarkets, the next stage, next scale for us, then Europe. And I would love to build this business successfully and then go on to do other brands with other brands or product lines with other people who are wanting to start the same thing and foster the next you know, not generation, but the next group of people trying to do something. Halo Top's really doing that for us. And I think that's an amazing way to sort of regenerate everything that you've done and help somebody else too.
Well, that sounds amazing. I wish you all the best of luck with that. I know you don't need it, but I wish you all the best.
I need it.
Yeah, that's it. The floor is now yours. And if you've got a final message for everyone listening or just want to tell them where to find out more about yourself or where to grab a coffee from you, please let them know now.
I would say if you haven't tried our coffees, we have a taster pack on our website. So just go there. You get one of each and you can see what you think of it yourself.
Brilliant. Perfect. I'm going to grab some straight after this call. It's been an absolute pleasure. And yeah, thank you so much.
Thank you.